Welcome to Freethinkers Living Sober Group's workshop on the varieties of secular experience, navigating AA in a secular way. On the last Sunday of each month, we have a different speaker or panel of speakers sharing their experience, strength, and hope for about 30 to 45 minutes on some aspect of getting, staying, or living sober in AA in a secular way. These workshops are recorded, and we post the audio on our website and on our YouTube channel. Check the chat for the links to those. The chat will be opened after the speakers have finished for everybody to be able to use. During the speaker portion, the chat function is only going to be available for the hosts to send or receive chat. We haven't asked anybody yet, but would somebody like to volunteer to read this Bill W. quote for us? If you would, just unmute and go.
I can do it.
Thank you.
My name is
Melanie. I think
Robin was first. Go ahead, Robin.
Go ahead.
In AA, hi, I'm Robin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Robert.
In AA, we are supposed to be bound together in the kinship of a universal suffering. Therefore, the full liberty to practice any creed or principle or therapy should be a first consideration. Hence, let us not pressure anyone with individual or even collective views. Let us instead accord to each other the respect that is due to every human being as he tries to make his way towards the light. Let us always try to be inclusive rather than exclusive. Let us remember that each alcoholic among us is a member of AA, so long as he or she so declares.
Thank you, Robin. I appreciate that. As free thinkers, we aspire to open-mindedness and to appreciating the sharing of others, particularly those with whom we disagree. So we ask only that everyone share without attempting to dissuade, argue, or disrespect anyone else or their beliefs. As a group, we're secular. That is, we don't endorse or oppose any system of belief. We don't have any quarrel with any form of religion. And we also don't use prayers of any kind in our workshops or our meetings. Our only wish is to assure suffering alcoholics that they can find sobriety in AA without having to accept anyone else's belief or having to deny their own. After the speaker or the panel of speakers in today's case, we'll have open sharing. And at that time, we'll open the chat as well. Please use the raised hand function so we can call on people in the order that they raise their hands. I can find the rest of the... You're welcome to ask questions at that point or share your own perspective and experience on the topic or topics that have been presented by the speakers. Please do remember that this is being recorded, so you might want to keep anonymity in mind. We won't be using the video portion of this, only the audio. Today, we're presenting three of our own Freethinkers Living Sober members to share on their experience with navigating AA and specifically with the Big Book. And doing that in a secular way. I'm really happy to introduce our three speakers who will each share for about 10 to 15 minutes each. And after that, we'll open it up. So the first person in our order of shares, as far as I can remember, is Kat G. Is that true, Kat?
Yes, I've unmuted myself.
Go ahead. It's all yours.
Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you. I'm Catherine, recovered alcoholic, and I'm happy to be here. And I was with the understanding it's supposed to be maybe 15 minutes, so I'm going to try very hard to stay within that framework. Anyway, my sobriety date is September 29th, 1985. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. And I wrote an outline here because there's so much I want to cover. I'm going to try to stick with it. I started my drinking in my late teens, like a lot of people, and over time it progressed, and eventually it became a daily thing, and my life became very unmanageable. And after about well, I'll say it was manageable until it wasn't. How about that? And so that took about maybe 12 years or so. And it got to a point where my only coping mechanism was drinking. Whatever happened, you know, I was happy, I drank. I was sad, I drank. I was lonely, I was with people, I just drank all the time. That's the kind of drinker that I was. And eventually the alcohol stopped working. It was no longer helping me cope with anything. I could drink excessively and not get high. I would black out several times a week. And I became terrified because I felt like my spirit was dying, that I was no longer me and my life was completely out of control. And I don't need to go into the details for that, but I see a few heads nodding. So in any case, but I didn't go to AA at first. I went to counseling. I didn't know anything about AA. And when I went to the counselor, she asked me if I believed in God. I found out later that she was in AA. And I thought that was peculiar, but I said, I guess, I don't know. You know, I didn't really have any sense of or concept of that. But she urged me to go to AA. I didn't want to. She suggested I try to control my drinking, and I could say that that was a miserable failure or a great success, because I found that I absolutely could not control my drinking as hard as I tried. And it was humiliating. And so I felt pretty beat. And eventually I took her suggestions and I went to AA. And when I got there, I was desperate. I was absolutely desperate. I was afraid when I saw all the God talk and the God language. I thought, this is a cult and they get you when you're vulnerable. And oh no, if this doesn't work, I'm screwed because I don't know what else to do. And so so I stayed, and I did have a gift of desperation. So I pretty much did what anyone told me to do. I went to lots of meetings. I got a sponsor. I worked through the steps somewhat through her and through the big book. I eventually became a sponsor. I did a lot of service work. I read the AA literature. So I took all these suggestions and I kind of parroted what everybody said. And I figured it didn't really make that much difference because, you know, this is what I got to do. Then this is what I got to do. So I stayed and I did find hope. But I didn't really get the fellowship that a lot of people had talked about because I felt that I didn't quite believe what other people believed. But I adjusted the language to suit myself. I would look for the messages and the guidance that was supposed to be there. And I kind of did this privately and found that it really did work for me. And the same way as it would talk about only men being alcoholics. And of course I knew women were too, and I just ignored it and went for, you know, what's the meat of it? What am I supposed to achieve here? And I like what Joe C says, that you can change the words don't mind. anyway, I did stay sober. I kept going to meetings. I kept doing service and sponsoring, but my life was still very unmanageable, and I didn't want people to know. I was kind of ashamed. I was making unhealthy choices and in really sick relationships and all kinds of things, and I wasn't very happy, and I was still very fear-based. And at one point several years ago, I decided to become a Buddhist, and I liked that it was a lay organization and more of a philosophy than a religion, and that there wasn't God involved, but the rituals and the prayer and the magical thinking didn't sit well for me, but I gave it a good honest try for a lot of years. And I still do like some of the tenets of it. It was during that time that I was introduced to Back to Basics. Some of you may cringe when you hear that term, but I loved it. This is Wally P's program from Tucson. And the idea is that you would go through all of the steps, all 12 steps through the big book in a day, in one day, do it all, just like fly through it and get a good sense of how it works. And the point was that, you know, you would start getting in the solution right away, and then you would learn it as you passed it on and learn to incorporate it in your life. But it was sort of get involved and get active right away and start helping others as well. And I like the historic value of it. I like that they said, oh, this is largely how AA started. Even before they had the big book, they would work on the steps right away and try to get some kind of a handle on their life. Do I hear a microphone on? Anyway,
we'll get them, don't worry.
Okay. Anyway, I liked it. I became a facilitator of these workshops. I traveled the country. I took hundreds of people through the steps. And of course, every time I did that, I was going through them myself. And I was doing this as a Buddhist and a non-believer and a woman. So I had a little bit of a unique twist on it. And because of that, I would tell people that you can... you know, you can change the words the same way that I have. Oh dear, sorry about that. Turn off my phone. Anyway, so I did this for several years, and I would tell people, if you're uncomfortable with the God talk, then do what I do. You know, I'm going to use the terms God and he and him, because I'm going to be reading out of the big book, but I'm going to be doing that out of convenience. And I want you to consider the period in which this was written and understand that, you know, you can replace the words the same way as I did. You can use higher power, spirit of nature, love. When they asked for prayer, you can use the term seek. In any case, you know, keep an open mind and give it a shot, you know, and people enjoyed it. And there might even be a couple of people here that did it with me years ago. Oh, you did, Robin. Cool. Dulcie, did you? I think maybe. I'm not sure. Anyway, and I'd say the idea is that you want to become empowered. Let me make sure this phone is turned off. And find your, you know, learn how to not be bogged down with the language and be find a way to use the principles in your life as soon as possible. So I was really saturated with AA during those years. And there was a shift that happened inside of me where I would say that it was basically, oh, why can't I get this to turn off? Wouldn't you know, isn't that one of Murphy's laws? There we go. All right. And so, the idea was that I was no longer looking for the outside things and circumstances to be good so that I could stay happy and joyous and free. But I learned that this was my personal responsibility, you know, the quality of my sobriety. And I became grateful for what I had, and I was learning to apply the principles. And that started to make all the difference when it was up to me and not something outside of me. So I continue to value the big book and what I learned in the back to basics approach. I like that it was a simple and clear formula to work the steps, and it was especially helpful that I've used it with people early in sobriety. And, you know, to continue to interpret and use all of the AA material, you know, I encourage everybody to interpret it in as many ways as there are alcoholics. I mean, it's a personal journey. There's no gotta do this, gotta do that. But we do want you to stay sober and have it work for you. So, and stay willing to work. So, by sticking with AA all these years, and I've never left the program from my first meeting, I have been able to become more honest, have more integrity, be more present, have more patience. And in general, you know, my life has become more manageable, which is the goal all along. You know, I want contented sobriety. But I was still a Buddhist for a long time, and AA didn't really feel like it fit anymore because of all the God stuff. And I felt alienated and misunderstood and alone. And I was kind of afraid I was going to have to leave AA, and I didn't want to because I was passionate about it. And that's when we started Free Thinkers Living Sober in in the Verde Valley in Arizona several years ago. I'm thinking seven now, I'm not sure. And oh my gosh, I felt a rekindled enthusiasm for my recovery. I felt that I wasn't judged, I wasn't alone, I could be my authentic self and not have to, you know, alter what I was saying so I didn't offend anybody, upset anybody. And before this, I didn't know there'd been any other options, you know, in AA. You know, this secular AA was amazing to me. Exactly when I needed it is when I discovered it. And since I've been involved in that, I also found that I no longer am a, you know, practicing Buddhist, but I still employ some of the tenets of Buddhism that I enjoy. I've become more discerning. I've become mindful, you know, of my thinking. And because of that, I'm aware of my behavior, because all behavior is born in thought. So I make better choices today. I exercise restraint of tongue and pen and internet. And I am more good-natured. I have a lighter heart. I'm more peaceful and serene and calm. I'm not saying this is 100%, but the improvement is miraculous. I mean, I'm only human. Sometimes I'm gonna have hard times, but I always, you know, I don't have to make amends so much anymore, and I hate making amends, so I'm really glad for that. And anyway, I've become kinder to myself and to others. And I have a better sense of purpose and direction and value. I've become a real asset to my community, which is amazing. I've learned about service in AA, and I've translated that into service outside, and try to be of service everywhere I can, but not at the jeopardy of losing my own serenity. Because I used to have volunteer Tourette's, you know, it's like, I'll do it, I'll do it, I'll do it. And now I've learned to kind of keep a handle on it, find balance. Balance is important. So I have gained independence by applying the principles that I've learned in AA, and I continue to do that, and through the support that I receive in the fellowship. It's very just as important to me as any other aspect of AA. And I have this self-reflection. So I basically live this awareness. You know, it's something that's always there, always there. If I'm uncomfortable and I can't put my finger on it, I go to somebody in the program to help me see what's going on. And, but this is who I am, you know, this awareness all the time. And it's amazing. And I stay willing to grow. I tend to think I'm a bit of a, I act like a know-it-all. I think I know it all. I do this all the time. I think I have all the answers, but at the same time, I'm teachable. So what is that, you know? But I guess I'm teachable, and I do keep learning. It's just sometimes an uncomfortable process to get there, and that's okay. I don't take myself too seriously. Rule 62, right? And so I continue to work with others almost every day. And these are people with varied beliefs and non-beliefs. I meet them where they are. We talk about that a lot in these rooms. And each relationship is unique. It's not a cookie cutter formula where one size fits all. So I am able to adjust however I need to so I can be the most helpful and effective. And I often refer to the big book, different passages, and suggest meditation, or even utilize the fourth step method that I used in, that I learned in the big book, or the Back to Basics workshop. And I love working with others, but they need to be honest and willing to work and open-minded, because I value myself today and I don't want to waste my time anymore. So this is a vital part of my recovery, working with people, and the benefits are maybe outweigh, you know, I probably help myself more than I help others. And I develop these incredible, deep, lasting, meaningful relationships finally. And I think that's so important in sobriety. So in conclusion, I see myself as a spiritual atheist. And my higher power, I define as a higher plane of consciousness. And I stay grateful and be at, and I'm at peace in the world, in a unpeaceful world, I guess I could say. And AA has given me a full and rich life, not just given me a life, but a quality. It's taught me to love myself and to love others. And I choose to thrive, not just survive. So I have most of the time contented sobriety. And that is not just in spite of challenges, but because of them. I'm able to walk through them with grace and dignity. And when I face them head on, and every time I become a little more courageous, a little more stronger, a little stronger, a little wiser. And I try to lead by example and be the best me that I can be. And that's pretty much it. And that's why I'm here today. And thanks for asking me to share.
All right, Kat, thanks. That was great.
Thank you so much. I hope I didn't go over too much.
Okay. Well, and our next speaker, following right on the heels of that, is Don R. He's a member who ports himself in from Toronto, Canada. Don?
Thanks, John. And I want to thank Joe C. for providing the stuff at the back end here, namely the site for this meeting. Anyway, where do I start? I want to thank Kat for a great presentation too. That was terrific. Stole my thunder on some points, but what the hell, you're going to hear them again anyway, just to reinforce what you've heard. Anyway, I say, I'm Don, I'm an alcoholic. I please ask you to keep an open mind to what I'm about to say. Some of it is not strictly AA stuff, and in terms of thought, at least it's not traditional AA. My dry date is April the 29th, 1994. I have not gone out since I got into the program. However, I did do a lot of slipping and sliding beforehand. You know that I'm going to stop drinking forever, and I would stop drinking forever, which would last sometimes 6-7 months, sometimes would last 3 or 4 days. And that's the way it went. My drinking career spanned 33 years from the time I was 16 to the time I was 49. It started as fun. I really loved the effect of alcohol. And I was 16, 17 years of age at the time, not with a lot of money. So drinking was a pursuit of opportunity. When I had the opportunity, I drank and I loved it. And as I went on, I had more money. I got through university, got into a career. And my drinking started to increase. I guess I had something to do with having more money. And but I didn't become a daily drinker for a long time. That took a while. And but eventually it did. And while it was fun at the beginning, by the time I got to the end of my career, it was misery. We talk about having freedom. You know, we get freedom in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't have freedom because I was so afraid that if I drank and went to a social gathering, I'd make a total ass of myself. Or worse, I'd go to a professional engagement and get drunk and make a total ass of myself in front of people who could have a severe effect on my career. So that's the way it went. At the end of my career, I was definitely a daily drinker. And my wife was threatening to leave. My kids really weren't speaking to me. And my wife, when she threatened to leave, I decided I better do something about it. And that was April 29th, 1994. I didn't go to AA immediately. I phoned them the next day after my, or the day that my wife told me that she was leaving. And I phoned AA and they told me where there's a meeting. And by 6 o'clock in the evening, I thought I could, I don't need AA. So I went the next month and a half white knuckling. And I was becoming desperate. I was literally becoming suicidal. And one of my friends recommended AA, and I knew somebody else who I thought might have had a problem with alcohol at some time. And I phoned that person, and they got me to my first meeting. So that's all the background I think that I need here. At the incident about the white knuckling. I knew that if I didn't do something, I was going to drink again. There was no question in my mind that the pressure was just building all the time. Anyway, I knew nothing about AA when I got here. And what it did, though, right from the very first meeting I went to, it offered hope. I didn't relate to anything the people said at the beginning, quite frankly, other than one thing. The guy said, if you don't find what you need here tonight, go to another meeting. And that gave me the hope. I said, okay, I didn't find really what I needed here tonight, but there's a suggestion, go to another meeting. And I did the next night, and I found the person. I found the person who was to become my first sponsor. And it just all made sense to me that I could sober up in AA. I joined a traditional group. In Toronto at that time, Joe, see if he's in the room right now. He can correct me on that, but I don't think there were any other groups in the city. And besides that, even if there were, there'd be very few of them. And I went to a local group, and it was traditional. I sobered up using the big book. I sobered up. Incidentally, I should mention, I've been an agnostic for an awful long time, but I was willing to swallow that and try to follow the God stuff as found in the big book. And I did. I went to church. I did all sorts of things to try and follow the God principles of the book, including trying to turn things over and all that stuff. Anyway, I did sober up. And I sobered up in that group. And I remain eternally grateful for the people in the group who helped me to sober up. So I'm here to talk about the big book and my role with it. Anyway, let's remember that the big book is a textbook. It sets out a program of recovery that you can study. And I want to emphasize that word study. You know, Glenn Rader, when he was here last month at the workshop, he said that study is an essential element of a successful program of recovery. Well, how do we study? We can study by reading. We can study by listening to audio tapes. We can listen to what people say in the fellowship at meetings, listen to speakers. There's all sorts of ways we can study, but textbooks are really good. After all, we use textbooks when we want to study history or science or what you name, whatever it is. So why not have a textbook for alcohol? And I have to remember also that AA has been a successful program of recovery for over 80 years. I mean, that's totally remarkable. And the big book was and remains that textbook studied by countless recovering and recovered alcoholics in order to learn and to practice the AA program. So I think we have to remember that it has been a very, very successful book in terms of the help that it's given countless alcoholics. And I'd never downplay that. Now, it's also the only textbook I had or knew about from 1994 until COVID came along. I just didn't go and look anywhere else. And although I am an agnostic, I as I said, I tried to accept the God of the AA big book for my first, and I did that for my first few years. But and I think this is sort of mimicking where Catherine went. You know, in my case, by my seventh or eighth year, I realized that when my inner agnostic reasserted itself, that I could not accept that God. And that became really important to me. But I stayed in AA. I just started retranslating the book. I like the book. I still like the book. I've done several studies of it, including a Joe and Charlie as recent as 2 years ago. If anybody doesn't know Joe and Charlie, two good old boys from the deep south. And I don't know what brand of fundamentalist Christian religion they are, but they certainly are. And, you know, but there was something in it that I got a kick out of and it worked for me. But what do I like about the book? I like the metaphorical language of it. And it's at times it's really poetic. I mean, you get lines like restless, irritable, and discontent, or cunning, baffling, and powerful, or happy, joyous, and free. I mean, that's pretty neat stuff. That's great language. And when I came into the program, that's what I was. I was restless, irritable, and discontent. And I found alcohol to be really cunning, baffling, and powerful. God, what it did to my life. It was powerful. And, you know, it's so powerful that if you have an alcohol problem, I can't do anything about it other than recommend AA or going to treatment. So that's a couple of things. And how about the description of an alcoholic as being an example of self-will run riot, whose troubles are basically of his own making? That's another thing the book is, you know, just giving these little insights into ourselves. And then there's a potted history in the book, a short history that is good enough. I'm not sure how accurate it is, but it's good enough to give you a bit of background in the program. So, anyway, but from the very beginning, I had problems with the big book. The book reflects society of the 1930s, where religiosity was the norm and sexism was rampant. Of course, it actually still is, but I don't think it's as bad as it was in the 1930s. The workplace was a different kind of place, and modern psychiatry and psychology the modern psychiatry is so much different. The modern psychology is so much different than it was in the late 30s. So we've learned so much. So that kind of cites the big book somewhere along the line. Let's just look at the sexism in the book, which presumes that AAs are the ones, that alcoholics are males, and they're the ones in recovery, and spouses are women who are supposed to clean up the mess after the alcoholic. You know, we're talking about language in the book that excludes 50% of the population, just like that. And I think this is a serious problem. The couple of notes that are in the book that say the program applies equally to men and to women, that doesn't cut it for me. Just doesn't cut it. I should let you know that one thing I've done in my professional career is I've written a couple of papers on sexism in the language of the law and made recommendations on how we should be getting rid of it. And it's not just sexism dealing with men and women, it's sexism that deal with people who are on the binary spectrum, on somewhere, you know, the whole LGBTQ plus community. And so I really find that language. And I've been involved in this since the 1980s. So anyway, I'm going to move along rapidly. Most attendees today, I guess get back to modern psychiatry and psychology. The changes are so dramatic with CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and the like of that. Now, until last month, it didn't really concern me that the big book, because I'd grown up with it. But as I was prepared for today, I found there were lots of things that really do trouble me, besides the ones I've mentioned. I'm not going to get into detail because I think I'm going to run out of time pretty soon. Kat made allusions to this, or in fact mentioned it. I like her. I believe that I'm responsible for my sobriety. That's a fundamentally important thing. I thought about this from the very time I came into the program. Turning your will and your life over to the care of God, as you understand it. How the hell do you turn your will over to anybody? Your will is attached to you, at least in my case. I think my will is attached to me, just like my shadow is attached to me when I walk around. It's right there at my heels. I believe in personal responsibility. The big book sloughs it all off onto God. In the last couple of years, I found other books on recovery. And at last, I found books to study that accord with my belief about personal responsibility. These include Glenn Rader's book, which is my favorite, Jeffrey Munn's book, and Beth H., who spoke here a couple of months ago, her book. I'm going to list these books in the chat, incidentally, so you can find them. I also just rediscovered Living Sober. That's an AA publication that's available online for free. Now, I've worked through the 12 steps with two of my newest sponsees using Rader, and it seems to work. They're still sober after a year. And I recommend that they read particular parts of the book, and I hope that they'll read others. There's some good stories at the back of the book if you take a look. So I've got about 8 points to cover to get to the end of this. Here they are. The big book is the original basic textbook for AAs. Even though it is a seriously flawed, it is still a worthwhile read, even if it's just a romp through early AA. The flaws have the effect of excluding those who are offended because of its sexism and because of its focus on God. In my opinion, this totally violates the third tradition, which in long form reads, our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. We may refuse none who wish to recover, nor ought AA ever depend on money or conformity. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group, they have no other affiliation. 3, I need at least one textbook so that I can engage in an ongoing study of and reflection on the AA program. 4, I still use the big book, but not as my primary textbook. While I still use it, I don't think it's essential that others do. In fact, if it puts you off, put it on the shelf. Maybe someday you might get it down and give it another try. 6, I don't deny the importance of the book. As stated earlier, countless AA members have gotten sober on the book. It may be that without the big book, AA would not even exist today. There is no denying the genius of Bill W., in my opinion, in selling a bunch of drunks on the idea that they could get sober by following the simple program set out in the book. And 7, for a long time, I thought the big book should be rewritten. I no longer think that way. I now believe that it is and will be impossible forever to do that. The traditionalists will never sign off on such a project. And besides, it is unnecessary. The marketplace is spoken. I have no idea how many 12-step recovery books have been published that in fact displace the big book for secularists. As a secularist, I believe it is futile to complain about the big book and its religiosity. As free thinkers, we can accept or reject it, but it sucks the oxygen out of the room to air resentments about it that underlies the sobriety of everyone in the room. And with that, I'm just about saying thank you for being here today. I hope that I have said something you'll find worthwhile. If you disagree with me, that's fine. I have big shoulders, and besides that, I'm in Toronto and most of you aren't. So thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Don. Pretty much perfectly on time. All right. And our last speaker is one of my favorite speakers of all time, Suzanne.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, hi. Hi, everybody. My name's Suzanne. My sobriety date is August 31st, 2017. Freethinkers Living Sober is my virtual home group, and I have a local home group here in Merrifield, New York State. I want to thank Kat and Don for their shares, and I'm obviously a little intimidated speaking after them because they're sober a very long time and I'm, 4.5 years sober. That said, I'm still pretty close to the disease. So I remember quite well what it's like to get sober for those of you who are newer like me. I remember the anger, the confusion, the cravings. And I remember hanging on really tight to everything I had inside me not to drink until the meetings in New York State where I got sober started, which was not until 8 o'clock at night. During my first 30 days of sobriety, I was here in New York before I went back to Arizona, and I've recently come back to New York. Anyway, I spent the days I got sober on a farm here in New York State, in my brother's farm where he does not live. It was isolated. It was in the woods. I was very much alone. I'd never tried to stop drinking. I've drank since I was 13, and I didn't find AA until I was a week away from turning 48 years old. So I have a pretty long drinking career, and I never went to AA, never considered it, didn't know anything about it when I got here. And the meetings, I went to 3. It took me 5 days to stop drinking and 3 meetings to decide I wanted to stop drinking. And what I needed was those meetings. Every night they felt like medicine, and they still do. I needed to let my ego be demolished. I needed to accept that I was an alcoholic, that I could never drink again, and I needed to ask for help and accept that help. And when I finally did, I was gifted a big book, which I still have in use. And at that point, I could actually hear, I could actually listen to the shares in the meetings. I didn't understand everything that was said. I didn't relate to everything in the meetings, and I still don't. However, I was taught to take what I need and leave the rest, and that's what I've done with the big book as an agnostic member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to stress that I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel that the big book is AA's history. It's its beginning, and it's the foundation on which I wanted to build my own program of sobriety. In those first 30 days, I read the stories in the back of the big book. That's what I started with. Just like the meetings, I couldn't relate to everything in every story, but there was always something in every story I could relate to, a feeling, an action, whatever. There was always something. And those stories got me through the sleepless nights that I had in my first 30 days and in the early days of my sobriety. Those stories got me through. I knew I wasn't alone, and all I wanted to do at night was drink, and I could pick up the big book and read those stories and not feel alone, because I wasn't ready to pick up the phone and talk to other women. I had lists, but I couldn't do it. So when I started working with a sponsor, probably around day 40, when I got back to Arizona, I read the big book cover to cover along with the 12 and 12. And the God word, it didn't bother me, because in my mind, I simply replaced it with my own version of powers greater than myself. Again, I'm agnostic. I believe there is no proof of a God, nor is there not proof of a God. I'm agnostic in the Webster definition sense of the word. My higher powers are not God. They're fluid. They're multiple. But there is magic there for me. The magic of knowing I'm not the center of the universe. And it was enough for me to know that. I mean, when I stood underneath a clear star-filled night sky and I looked up, it was enough for me to feel small. Even as my thoughts and feelings were growing deeper, not bigger, but deeper. And I read that book cover to cover multiple times. I've read the big book multiple times with and without other people. And now I can go to any meeting anywhere. And if it is a book study, I understand what they're talking about. I understand the discussions, and I can agree or disagree with knowledge of the book in my shares, because I know the material, because it helps me confidently speak freely about being agnostic and in the meeting. So newcomers, if they are agnostic or atheist, they know they're not alone, and that it's okay to be in a traditional meeting, reading the big book, studying the big book, and have a problem with the God word, but not have to have a problem with the God word. I can speak about how the big book helped me, even though the God word is in it. And incidentally, there are other words than God to describe powers greater than ourselves in the big book. And the one that I related to is spirit of the universe, but there's many others. I didn't get stuck because the word God was used a lot. I mean, taking into consideration the big book was written in 1939, I find no offense in the outdated language. I don't mind the chapter to the wives, because honestly, it reminds me of exactly what I went through years ago in a 17-year marriage to an active addict that marriage ended with him killing himself. We agnostics is a chapter that can be read in a very sarcastic tone, or it can be studied for bits of good information for sobriety. Even as an agnostic, I don't find offense in it. What doesn't work for me doesn't, but certain lines do. For example, in the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. Getting sober and knowing I wasn't the center of the universe did this for me. And I challenge any real alcoholic to read chapter 3, more about alcoholism and not relate. How it works contains the steps. And for me, the steps changed my life 100% for the better. I'm not a one and done with the steps. Every time I work them, I learn more about myself, more about how I can grow into a better sober person, be more helpful to others in AA and in my community, and be kinder to myself and to the people in my life. The big book suggested that I see doctors for mental and physical health and to trust those doctors. And I do. Today, I have a sponsor who's Christian, and I've sponsored Christian, pagan, Wiccan, and agnostic women with no issues. I've worked with the Big Book and the book Getting Sober Without God side by side when I sponsor agnostic women to help them when they struggle. I read other literature today, secular literature and AA literature, but I still work the traditional steps with my sponsor. I didn't have secular AA when I first got sober, and all it took for me was to have an open mind and the sponsor I chose to have the same open mind. Together, we discovered what powers greater than myself I did believe in and accepted, and the rest came fairly easy. I don't care that some steps have the word God in them or refer to a male deity I don't believe in. Once again, I changed the word in my mind to what makes sense to me, because the rest of the step completely shifted the way I think about life. Every step gives me the new perspective I need to stay sober and happy that I am sober. AA saved my life. I respect the big book steps, the traditions, and our principles. I've seen members of AA relapse that are both religious and secular. For me, it is a choice I make one day at a time to stay sober, and for me, the big book remains part of my program. God is just a word to me, and as my dear friend, sober many decades longer than me, often very eloquently says, I made a decision to get sober. I need to stay sober, and regardless of which literature I read or which meetings I attend, that's what matters to me. Sobriety is my priority. So in summary, my mind is no longer stuck on what I don't want to read or see. The big book is our history, our foundation, and was my introduction to the steps, traditions, and the concepts. I believe in those things. I believe in service. I don't say I am a secular member of AA. I say I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am part of Alcoholics Anonymous, regardless of what I do or do not believe spiritually. The wisdom in the book is there if I look for it, and I have learned it is good to not have contempt before investigation. Thank you for letting me share.
All right.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Thank you, Suzanne. I really appreciate it. All right. So that ought to give us some stuff to talk about, y'all. And I just want to thank everybody for great talks. We're going to open up the room for sharing. And please use the raised hand function. If you're on a phone, that's a *9. And I'll call on you in order. Once I call on you, you'll have to unmute yourself, given that Kenji has given you that ability back. We will now also open up the chat. Now, we've posted a lot of links in there. You can save the chat if you know how to do that, or you can just put the, select all and copy and paste it if you want to keep it that way. It might even be simpler. Please remember that this is being recorded, so keep your anonymity in mind. We also have a timer. If you might have noticed while the speakers were on, I used the timer as well at the last 4 minutes. So when my background is green, you're good to go. When it turns yellow, that means you're coming up on 4 minutes. And when it's red, that means your pants are on fire. You need to get out of the room. Okay. So, or something similar. Just a reminder, by the way, as free thinkers, we do aspire to open-mindedness and appreciating the sharing of others, particularly those with whom we disagree. So we ask when you share that you share without attempting to dissuade or argue or disrespect anyone else or their beliefs. We try to practice love and appreciation here. And one last thing. We always have these workshops at the last Sunday of the month. So we will be doing the same thing again on February 27th. It'll be 11 a.m. Pacific and noon Arizona time and 2 p.m. Eastern. And so I hope you'll join us for that. With that, I haven't seen any hands go up yet, but I'm fully anticipating that they will. So thank you all for being here. And we'll start it out with my friend Al.
Thanks, John. Thanks to the speakers. Those were all great. We all have our opinions. We heard a little bit about the history, and we all know we heard about the fellow that comes to Bill's door and bangs on the door and tells Bill he has religion. That was no accident. That was a friend of Bill's, but he was also a member of the Oxford group. And Bill thought it was a miracle. The guy was sober. He was a stumble bum drunk. Here he is sober. And then all this can be found in Bill's story in the Big Book. And it's, we sort of gloss over the Oxford group. Bill was in the hospital for the fourth time. That's when he saw the bright light, found God, and never drank again, But also in that same story in the Big Book, the fellow was Ebbie Thatcher, who was Bill's friend, came to the hospital, and Bill had him share his, or Ebbie had Bill share a story. He had him do several things, like make a list of people he'd harmed, sit quiet and seek God's knowledge for yourself. About a half a dozen, maybe seven or eight things that sounded exactly like the steps, but they weren't. What Ebbie was doing was carrying the message, and that message was a message of Christ. It had nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. Bill even went to Oxford group meetings. Him and Lois, his wife, became members. He was on a 6 months late. That was in 1934. I think when AA started was when he met Bob. Naturally, Ebbie wasn't number one. It had to be Bob, or Bill had to be number one. So he found Dr. Bob, not by accident. He was directed through a group, the Oxford group, which was very strong in Akron. And so we had those three people had two things in common. They were members of the Oxford group. They were all three alcoholics. Ebbie could never stay sober, so they just wrote him out of the book, basically. And it was Bill and Bob. And what Bill did was genius, but it wasn't original. He adapted those principles that he talks about in his story in chapter one of the Big Book. He adapted those his interest was in alcoholics more than Christ, the way I read it anyway. He was interested in helping alcoholics, but he thought it was a great plan. The Oxford plan, he adapted those principles. They didn't have steps, but they did have principles. And he adapted those steps to, or those principles for steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then the story takes off, and then he writes the Big Book, And I'm here to plug secular AA. I'm a member of AA for 37 years, sober every damn day of it. But, we gloss over that when we go to those meetings and you hear them talking about prayer and God. They're doing exactly what they read, what they hear. As Bill put it out, we're a small sort of subgroup here. You know, we're alcoholic or atheists and agnostics, and you know, and we fled the big book. We fled, not that we still don't read it, and there's good stuff in it, some good stuff, horrible stuff for a newcomer who comes here, thinks he's coming to a secular meeting, and a secular meeting is a God meeting or a big book meeting. You know, there's plenty of secular stuff that we can keep in our meetings. We have all kinds of special meetings, gays meetings, women's meetings, men's meetings. Now we have secular meetings, and I'm pro-secular. It works fine for the God people. That's great in conventional meetings. I'm plugging secular AA for alcohol, for carrying the message for different types of alcoholics. Enough of my rant. Thanks, John. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Al. Kenji.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kenji. I'm an addict and alcoholic, a human in recovery. Oh, wow, this meeting has been, has been knocking my socks off. And it's just what I hoped it would be. It feels to me really healing. I first got sober in the early 80s in Los Angeles. The meetings there were, it's not definitely not the Bible Belt, but it certainly is gaudy and it certainly is big booky, as is it up here in San Francisco, where I've lived for the last 30 years. I'm now about 14 months sober. So I've had a kind of zigzaggy Groundhog Day cycle ridden history in my recovery, but it feels like it's really sticking now. And that maybe, it's probably due to several things, but having found secular AA around the world on Zoom certainly is part of it, I'm sure. It may not be the biggest part of it, though. I've certainly found a lot of service to do in the Zoom paradigm, and that probably has a lot to do with it, too. Really dealing myself in has been really good. So early on in my recovery, I found the We Agnostics group in L.A., and the founder of that group, a guy named Charlie Polachek, who you can read a lot about on the internet, which shared that he came into AA an atheist and 20-something years later at that time, 20-something years of sobriety in AA had made him a better atheist. But then he'd go on to say there was no step he couldn't work as an atheist. And I took from that I didn't have to take the steps literally. I didn't have to take every word in the big book literally. I could, and that worked for me. Although I've always done my inventory pretty much exactly the way the big book lays it out, although not in content, but not in form. I have my own way of doing it that doesn't involve columns, but the content is exactly the same. And that's been proven really enormously helpful to me. Basically learning to when something bothers me, to look at what's going on my side of the street, that's where the solution is and where the healing is. I too have gotten a lot out of the big book. I know the big book really well, because even though We Agnostics was my home group for many years in LA, I've also always gone to book studies every week up until the last year where I've been in secular AA. We don't do book studies. I was offended by We Agnostics, by chapter 4. Oh, got to speed it up here so I see the yellow light. In sitting in book studies and reading it again in more recent years, I don't see that much to be offended by anymore. I think there is a lot of good stuff in there. I think it's really useful to know what's in that book. It is our foundation. Both historically and in throughout most AA. I really, I'll finish with this. I met with an atheist one-on-one in a Zoom room last year, and we read the book aloud to each other and discussed it as we went, pretty much paragraph by paragraph, talking about what we really related to, what really inspired us, what offended us, what we just couldn't relate to. And we both had an excellent experience doing that. And I've thought about putting together a meeting to do that. I proposed that in, I see the red, I'll finish in a couple moments. I proposed that in one of these so-called secular AA Facebook groups and had such a hostile reaction that it kind of scared me off doing it. But I still think doing it as a small group could be really, could be a really good experience. And maybe I'll muster the courage to act and the effort to actually put that together one of these days. Thanks.
Thanks, Ken. Yeah, you got to watch out for those Facebook groups. Tim.
I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tim.
I love what everybody shared and thank them for what they shared today. I agree that there's a lot of wisdom in the big book. I think the fact that the 12-step program has been adopted by multitudes of other various difficulties of addiction and problems to deal with those says that it does work. The difficulty I have with the big book is the dogma that some people embrace it with, which is sometimes similar to the dogma that troubles me so much from some people's readings of the Bible, some people's readings of the Quran, that every last word of it is perfect and it's an inspiration from God, and that we should not read it selectively and with any degree of thoughtful wisdom. So I appreciate what everybody shared today about that, that if I can read the big book and look at it from the important things and the truth and the wisdom that is there and disregard the parts that are dogma, I will have a lot more useful reading of it. And I like that perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Dave from Concord.
Yeah, Dave Alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
Boy, I'd love to thank Kat and Don and Suzanne for their talks. All three of them had somewhat different takes on it. I got sober in 1996 and spent 25 years or so in traditional AA, growing up, getting sober, finding my way, I wish that I had the ability that Suzanne seems to have to just sort of magically change the words and lose the meaning of what was written in the book. Because I really did struggle for a long time with certain aspects of it. There were years when I absolutely refused to read the essay on Tradition 2 because it's just, I don't know, really, really tough going for an atheist. Bill spends the entire essay, ranting and raving about his impressions of what other believers are, and spends exactly one paragraph at the end on insanity. It's just, it was hard. It was really a struggle for me, but I did get through it. Did it partially by reading some stuff and partially by translating in my head. I've been sort of lurking around the outskirts of secular AA for a couple of years. And when the pandemic hit and everything went to Zoom, I kind of took it as an opportunity and first jumped on the Saturday Beyond Belief meeting and I kind of had my socks blown off, and then started going to the Thursday speaker discussion meeting for Beyond Belief, and I've been going to the Tuesday night Freethinkers meeting, where I've gotten to starting to get to know Suzanne and Don, but I've never met Kat. My second sponsor was a big back to basics guy. They ran it as four meetings in a month to get through the 12 steps. And it was a huge controversy because of, you know, my God, they were using Wally P's literature. It's affiliation. We can't do that. Yeah, exactly. I think the thing, you know, I wanted to get to here in listening to some of the people on the meetings, I've started to see how pieces of the big book really are helpful, really make sense. You know, listening to Grateful Jeb talking on Thursday night and, you know, his being able to pick pieces out of the big book that are really powerful. And I've also found stuff, you know, the opening paragraphs that talk about step one in the big book are just some of the most powerful description of me as an alcoholic that I've ever been able to find. But there's other books out there. And, you know, as Don said, you know, there's all these other books that present the steps and present that methodology and that philosophy without Bill's Oxford group take on things, reading the histories, the writing of the big book, William Shriver's book is really great to kind of cut through some of the Bill's looseness with the truth, shall we say, in some of the stuff. Is really a interesting thing. Talking about people like Hank Perkhurst and Jim Burwell, who've been not talked much about in AA, and their contribution to the whole thing has been really, really useful. So anyway, red light, I guess I'm done. Thank you all so much. It's been a really great meeting so far. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. So glad you could make it. Erica.
Hey, hey, John, thank you
for being here
and your service. Wow, this was chock-a-block. I felt like I was in a candy shop. So much was said. I just sort of appreciated the thread of the reachable and teachable aspect of recovery. And how, you know, as I get more sober with each year, you know, I realize that, you know, whoever has the talking stick, you know, it just embedded in our humanity is the power of stories. And like, it's what makes us human. And there's some great stories in the big book. And so the other aspect is I don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So I look at all of it as usable, you know, take what you liked and leave the rest. I learned in Al-Anon. And I think the other thing is that, you know, that when we're little, you know, the cement is wet, quite literally. And we get that opportunity. It's when we can learn languages most easily. And then that door, that window closes. And I think we all have a very interesting moment where, am I flashing? Okay, it looks like it's flashing.
You're good.
When we're about to get sober, where the cement is wet again. And whatever literature is put before us or we gravitate towards can really make an impression. So now, you know, in my 30th year, I'm starting all over again with, you know, Back to Living Sober, which is my favorite of all the books. But I see, you know, the traditional AA books. And, you know, it still annoys me that Bill wouldn't let Lois write to the wives. Kind of ridiculous. And I could never have survived in AA all these years, having discovered, you know, secular AA in a bigger way, you know, in the last 2 years of Zoom. I could never do the program AA without this, you know, for lack of a better word, sister program. And I love the reminder that tradition you know, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I've taken that phrase rapacious creditor. You know, I can go off on a good rant, you know, ripped out of the 12 and 12. And I love those phrases. There's some wonderfully fiery phrases in there. And I, you know, it's, you know, we're all little snowflakes and no two alike. And really, I think all these decades in traditional meetings has helped me, you know, develop some tolerance. Because if you like everyone in the meetings, you ain't going to enough meetings. So just, I love these panels and thanks everyone for your service. Okay.
Thanks, Erica. Yeah, I love that. My sponsor told me that early on. If you like everybody in the meeting, you're not going to enough meetings. Lori.
Thanks. I'm Lori, Grateful Alcoholic.
Hey, Lori.
Hi. There's, oh my goodness, there are so many, so much good stuff in all three speakers. Just blown away. I made some notes. Especially liked the idea of working with the Jeffrey Munn book and the Big Book side by side, you know, with the newcomer that's really confused. It's just brilliant. It's just brilliant. And it also kind of emphasizes that there is so much good stuff in the Big Book for our sobriety on, you know, for living life on life's terms. That's what the steps did for me, is to, you know, take responsibility and, you know, just plug into reality and, you know, deal with the world with my, you know, recovering alcoholism, and then it's just not going to go the way it's, you know, the way I think it's going to go. But I want to say that More About Alcoholism is probably my all-time favorite Big Book chapter. Every time I read it, it's a revelation to me, because I came in here as kind of a high bottom drunk. I had lots of yets, and it was starting to get bad really fast. But all of that, those experiences and stories and words and More About Alcoholism really struck me, that because I could see, even as a lightweight drinker, high bottom drunk, you know, didn't get in too much trouble, but I could see all of my machinations in More About Alcoholism. So I would definitely throw out We Agnostics. And, you know, I want to say that I grew up in traditional AA, and I even, my spiritual journey is quite something. And early on in my sobriety, I joined a evangelical Christian group, and then, moved away from that more into my agnosticism, but really had no problem with the language of the Big Book, except for the sexist language. Because I'm a feminist from the, you know, probably since I was born. And, but I really was not offended until you stick around for a while. I have a few decades in AA. I needed something more than the dogma. And my second husband, he came out as an atheist in our traditional AA groups, and the reaction wasn't good. And so I started exploring secular AA, and my mind opened, but I'm not willing to completely throw out the Big Book. It has a lot of good stuff in it. And I really want to thank Dawn for especially bringing up the sexism in it, because that's really not talked about or pointed out as eloquently as you did. And I really appreciate that. That needs to be talked about more. And I just want, you know, the Big Book is a tool and a textbook, and that's all I've got. Thanks so much for this presentation. It's just been fantastic.
Thanks Lori. Friday. Robin, you're up.
Hi, I'm Robin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Robin.
Wow, my socks were blown off too. I'm barefoot. It was really great. I mean, I was nervous for Don speaking after Kat, and then I was nervous for Suzanne for speaking after those two. And oh my gosh, you all absolutely knocked it out of the park. It was fabulous. So much stuff. You know, the big book, I love the big book. I've always liked the language. I don't like the sexism, the, you know, there is a little bit of intolerance there, but I loved what some of our speakers were saying. I could so relate to having my spirituality be fluid, and it's so fluid. I feel like a super spiritual person trapped in an intellectual body or something. I don't know. So I'm all these contradictions, and I absolutely love that there's a place and people that speak exactly what I was so ashamed of for so many years, so ashamed of. And I didn't talk to anybody about how I felt. But you know, the big book, from the very time I picked it up, I never saw anything that I couldn't live with either. I kind of took what I wanted and left the rest. And you know, I was so blessed to be raised in AA in Ohio. I've been to Founders Day and tons of panels and workshops and done 24 hours of AA at Founders Day. And so I was just able to, I mean, I did sobriety like I did drugs and alcohol, you know, I just, so anyway, I really loved the book. I think in 1994, when I picked up some other kinds of books, somebody told me, keep a really open mind because this lady has some crazy ideas. And so from the very first time I opened the page, that's exactly what it was. I knew I had to just kind of skip over what I didn't understand, which of course, 20 years later, I've come to believe all that stuff. I just wasn't ready for it at the time. And you know, I was an evangelical Christian. I got saved and I was in a worship band and all this stuff when I was 16 or 17. I've been looking my whole life. Like Kat, I'm so, so grateful I'm an alcoholic, because where would I be if I wasn't? I mean, I don't know where I'd be, but I'm just adore Alcoholics Anonymous. I adore my sobriety. I celebrated 23 years yesterday. The other thing that's really cool for me is the exclusions. I mean, I can't imagine changing the book. I hear people in meetings say the first 165 pages, and thank God for the stories, because they were magical and they made me one of, and they, you know, they still make people, I'm one of this program, and I'm able to stay sober and study. And I love Joe and Charlie. I'm not a Christian. And I love Wally. I happened into talk about happenstance. I was taking a walk one day and happened into Kat's workshop on Back to Basics. I just wandered in. I was on a walk and there was this AA symbol and I stopped to check it out. And lo and behold, I ended up in a Back to Basics. So, and I've done that too before, but I just feel like I've been in all the right places at all the right times in my sobriety. And I'm just so grateful that I found my way back to this workshop through my home group yesterday. So that was really good. Thank you so much, speakers. You just have no idea how much you meant to me. And that's all I got. Thank you.
Thanks, Robin. Another one of our Toronto contingent, Joe.
Hey, thanks to all of my big book experts. appreciate the lesson. I'm a yes and guy, you know, that works great. And that works. That's also great. You know, when I go to refuge recovery, my years of experience in AA have no currency. my knowledge of the 12 steps have no currency. They're not needed there. They're not hated. They're just not needed. Same with Life Ring. They've got their own toolkit. And same with Smart Recovery. I like to go to those places. And I because I love addicts. I love people in recovery. And I love hearing the way they're getting this. I didn't grow up with the big book, so it's not my thing. I didn't read it in my first decade of sobriety, and I don't think I've read it this century, but I did read it in the 90s when it was a big thing in Toronto, and I just wanted to get in on the game, right? Deal me in, right? And 164 pages, that's short. What, we're going to read it again? Are you kidding me? But it obviously works. I could see it worked in Toronto. This was the way they got sober and they owed their life to it. I just, one of the big differences of AA and NA is when I go to NA meetings, nobody knows who the founder is. No one quotes the founder, right? We seem to, like one of the things I learned in secular AA or was reinforced, I guess I always knew it, is I wasn't going to get rid of my ego. But, you know, but it's always there. So I associate it with secular AA. We're so cool. I'm humble, but this secular AA, it's the bomb, right? Or this book, it's the bomb. I'm associated with this book or this guy. I'm a Bill Wilson guy, you know, and, you know, so by association. I just wonder if that's the only thing that goes wrong, if that's the only thing that makes it toxic for people who, have a more negative attitude towards the big book than I have, because I can be critical of it. Like I can be critical of Stairway to Heaven, right? You know, but who cares? Okay. Thanks. I'll continue with my lesson. On to you, Judy.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
How can you be critical of Stairway to Heaven? What's the matter with you? Judy.
Hi. Wow. Thank you, Joe and everybody. My name is Judy. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater, alcoholic, and Al-Anonic. And I really have gotten so much from this today. Kat, yes, I met you over 10 years ago walking into your workshops and haven't stopped listening to you ever since. I thank you, everybody, Don and Suzanne as well. I've been so struck with gratitude listening in here. And that was the second G word I hated when I came into these rooms. The first was God, and the second was gratitude. And here I am just overflowing with gratitude, thinking that I get to play with you guys many times each week. And always learning and growing. And I've been looking at kind of the trajectory of my recovery, the stages, all those kind of things, because I've been in 12-step programs for 47 years. Unbelievable. But what was I going to say? Oh, man, I always drop it. I know. I had to be adaptive and make it work because my first program was Overeaters Anonymous, and we couldn't even worry about the God stuff. We had to substitute the word food when there was alcohol written there. We didn't have any literature whatsoever. So that was the first thing. I had to adapt and get what I needed out of everything, right? And then I heard, I guess it was, what was your name, Erica? I wrote it down. I'm sorry, but she said then in Al-Anon, she had to learn about take what you can use and leave the rest. And that Al-Anon was my second program. So finally, by the time I got to AA, I was well-trained in adapt and make it work. And I have things written all over my calendars, NMW, NMW. No matter what, no matter what you say, no matter what I read, no matter how offended I get or my anonymity violated or on and on and on, I ain't leaving. I don't care. I'm not leaving this way of life because I've so grown, benefited, and gotten all those attributes that Kat was naming, you know. the relaxation, the self-acceptance, the confidence, the eagerness of inquiry, all those wonderful things that I didn't have when I got here knowing so much. And so I planted, there is something that's been happening lately though that I just want to share. Is that I go to an early morning meeting I've been going to for over 30 years. And this morning at the end of the meeting, they all did the Lord's Prayer. And that I have not encountered since my earliest days. And I was raised Jewish, and my family people were always about, we're not Christians, we're not Christians. That was their big claim to fame. I don't know what they did believe in. But I don't know, it made me feel apart, you know, separated, like that's not my prayer. So I want to say that out loud because I don't like having that feeling. And it's not going to drive me anywhere, but there is a kind of disconnect that happens. It's sort of like, you know, like a little cat, you know, pushing her paws back away, kind of. And especially because of today's world and all the anti-Semitism that's brewing up, I'm a little scared. So this is where I get to say those things, not in a religious way. So thank you.
Thanks, Judy. Well, Dale, we got a couple of minutes left. You want to wrap it up for us?
Oh, thank you. I'm Dale. I'm an alcoholic.
Dale.
I got sober in 81. And at that time, it was, I was very desperate. So I listened to everything they said and read the book several times and all this and that. But I never really got the God thing. I tried really hard, but I never got it. And after a year of sobriety, my sponsor fired me because I refused to pray. I haven't had a sponsor since. But for several years, I because I was kind of out as a atheist, I was kind of treated as a second-class citizen, a second-class member in AA. And that always bothered me. But in the mid-80s, a secular meeting was started in my hometown. This was in South Florida. A lady from New York was a snowbird, and she wanted what she had in New York in South Florida. So she started a meeting. And it was my lifesaver, really. I started attending that meeting exclusively. I went there for 25 years, and it was wonderful. They spoke my language. They understood me. Essentially, they were my people. And we never talked about the big book. You know, it just wasn't a thing. But and I over the years I've pretty much ignored the big book, never thought much about it. But in 2010 I moved to another town, and they didn't have a secular meeting there, so I started going back to traditional. And I met this guy. He had like 50 years of sobriety, and I always enjoyed old timers. And because I was becoming one, I kind of, you know, latched on to this guy because he had a lot more sobriety than I did. And I found him at a meeting. It was a big book meeting. And I popped in, and I had my old book. I forget what edition we're talking about, but printed back in the 70s. And I realized as they were reading the book that mine wasn't the same. And I asked about it, and they told me that a new book had been, they were reading out of the new edition. And I'm like, oh my God, there's a new edition? I had no idea. I was like 12 years late finding out there's a new edition. So I bought a new edition right away that day, and I took it home. I was so excited. I was so excited to find out what they had changed. And they changed nothing. Nothing. The first 164 were zero. And you can't imagine my disappointment, my frustration, my anger. Yes, I was actually pissed off. And I decided then and there that if they weren't going to do it, I would. And I sat down at my computer and I started writing. And I had no idea where I was going with this sort of thing. But I sat at my computer for several hours every day for like 3 or 4 years or something like that. And I rewrote it. I didn't have to go through committee or GSO or A World Services, nothing. Me. So it was just the way I wanted it, right? And, you know, a lot of people talked about how wonderful the book is, how many good things there are in the book. And I agree with them. There's a lot of great stuff. And I commend these guys, Bill Wilson particularly, to have the kind of insight back 80 some years ago to write some of the things he did. And I understand it's a product of its era, but it's frustrating that it never gets updated or it doesn't get shelved and replaced. And I understand why they do that too. It's all about money. They sell millions of copies. You know, they're not gonna let that go. They're not gonna let that go. So, you know, I really empathize with the people. I mean, I've heard some people say they've been sober for decades, and someone said this is their first secular meeting. I'm like, oh my God, you know. I feel so privileged that I had secular AA and throughout my sobriety, the vast majority of my sobriety. And now that we have Zoom, everybody's getting on board and we have all these new people that are discovering secular AA.
Thank you.
And we're not so different from all these other people. We actually get sober the very same way. We just don't do it their way. We do it our way. And John's giving me the high sign, so I'm going to shut up. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Dale. And thanks for your edition of the big book, too, by the way.
Have you ever seen it?
So Freethinkers Living Sober are going to have another workshop at the end of February, so stay tuned. Please join us. And thank you all for being here. I want to thank especially the Beyond Belief group for providing the Zoom meeting room, because it allows more participants. Also, thanks Kat and Kenji for doing the background stuff and taking care of the chat feature. The other thing I wanted to mention is that if you have any feedback or ideas for future workshops, let us know at the email address that we provided in the chat. You can copy the chat, so you'll have all of those links and everything else. And lastly, the opinions expressed here tonight are strictly those of the individuals expressing them. What you've heard here was spoken in confidence and should be treated as such. We share to help ourselves and to help each other, so we welcome everybody's experience, strength, and hope. Many of us have found that when we consider what we have heard with an open mind and heart, we often gain a better understanding of ourselves and each other. We also learn how to handle day-to-day problems better. At least I have. Members often share both trials and triumphs with each other, so let there be no gossip or criticism, but only love and appreciation, understanding, and companionship. We like to end our meetings with the responsibility declaration. So if you want to unmute and join us, you're welcome to. Let me put it up here. And Who is responsible?
I am responsible.
When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. Yeah. Thank you, everybody. Great meeting.